Normally, right about now, I would have a funny, hopefully, introduction about the theme of tonight's episode. In this case, failed TV pilots. But there's not really much to say that we don't already say in the episode. And anyway, we have the absolute longest post-credit sequence we've done yet, with what might be the most Glenningest moment of Glenning ever, at least according to Glenn. So, turns out I'm not even greenlighting this intro.
No. Welcome to Turns Out, the bluffing game of tall tales and blatant lies. I'm your host, David J. Lohr, and joining me tonight are a veritable rogues gallery of liars and Kelly Gamont. Hi, Kelly!
Hi, David. I was super pumped about getting to be Rogue One.
You could be.
You introduced me first, so I'll take it.
I'm sure you're good at lying, too. Also joining me, the co-host of The Villain Edit, Monty Ashley. Hello, Monty.
I'm a rogue, but I'm hoping to multi-class into sorcerer.
Ooh. Nice. I've got some dice just in case. Also joining us in the last year, our next guest has been dead, been to prison, and been a regular on Pod for Him, Travis Bedard.
Yeah, I'm really hoping the next year is a little bit less eventful.
And finally,
well, we're done with Pod for Him, so you're fine.
There you go. Yeah, no more talking about sad songs. That's all I'm saying. And finally, if you don't know him, odds are your mailman's dentist's third grade teacher might. The host of Afoot, Mr. Glenn Fleischman.
Ahoy, hoy. I'm more Rouge Maverick than I am a Rogue One.
I'm more Brett Maverick myself. That's what my pappy always said.
Better choice.
Well played, sir.
Thank you. So the fall TV season is upon us. And yeah, that's about right. And knowing how new shows premiere with a splash and then sink like a stone, I thought, what better topic than failed unsold TV pilots? Just about every series that gets on the air films a pilot ahead of time in the hopes of getting picked up to series. But for every one that gets on the air, even the short-lived ones, there are dozens and dozens of pilots that fall by the wayside. Some sound interesting, but some do not. For example, if Where's Norman had gone to series, Alan Alda would have been dealing with an invisible alien baby in suburbia instead of starring in MASH. Well, all right, he probably would have been free from MASH, but still.
Okay.
Norman the baby? Like, they're literally asking what happened to it?
I don't know.
Invisible?
I assume Norman is the baby. But yeah. It could be Alan, because where is he? Because he's dealing with the baby. I don't know.
I'm sad for you, David, that this isn't something you own on VHS from the early 90s.
I wish it were. It is from the late 60s. It's from when, you know, My Favorite Martian and Bewitched and Genie and all the things are up there. So, yeah, invisible alien baby.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds like something UPN would have tried.
Saves on special effects, invisible characters.
Not a lot of people know this, but the fence in Home Improvement, completely CGI.
Also the third son. So anyhow, Travis, Glenn, Monty, and I each have found a failed pilot to tell you about tonight, Kelly. The trick is,
good heavens,
only one of them is true. It's up to you to figure out which pilot is the real one.
Oh, no.
So, why don't we start with, I will choose at random, Travis.
Oh, fantastic. Let's haze the new guy. Yeah. He's never done this before. Let him go first. There's no easing in.
It's how you learn
there
to
totally
swim.
Isn't. This is what they did to me on my first time on the show as well.
You, you could have warned me, Kelly. That would have been very friendly.
I'm so sorry.
Don't worry.
Just your beer, sweetie. You'll be fine.
Don't worry. You can't do it wrong. Just take a deep breath and push forward.
I'm the designated show ruiner, so you're okay.
Oh, yeah. We're safe until Glenn goes.
Exactly. Oh, sweet. When David said it was,
wait, you're starting like that? Go ahead.
You're not going to do it like that, are you? When David said it was unsold or failed TV pilots, I started thinking about all my playwright friends who've been writing things. So I actually don't know if there's footage of this show. A friend of mine from college, Lindsay Joy, was a young blood fellow at EST in New York. And on one of his culture dives, Ben Affleck caught her brunch, her Youngblood brunch. And when they were talking afterwards, they bonded a little bit because she's a massive Red Sox fan and Ben is a massive Red Sox fan. And
what? No.
I know, right? The hat's not a lie. That's not a pose. He really loves it. We don't always claim him, but he claims us.
Like it or not, yeah.
he's ours somehow. But in 2007 or 2008, they were trying to do a different take on Project Greenlight, and rather than take screenplays, they wanted to show the writing process. So they grabbed a bunch of writers and they invited Lindsay to be part of that team. And so as part of that process with Project Never to See the Air, she created the prize of the series was going to be a short, like a 6-episode whatever with HBO, and Rachel McAdams was going to star. And so it was sort of angle this for a short miniseries, and you need to use Rachel McAdams, like any good writing prompt. And Lindsay is a massive pop culture junkie, and she decided that she wanted to use Rachel McAdams in a Freaky Friday.
Oh my
goodness. And so it was Rachel McAdams in a sci-fi Freaky Friday, and the person they had in to read was Patrick Wilson, from The Watchmen and Angels in America. And he was the commander on a space station, and Rachel McAdams was his daughter, and they get Freaky Friday'd and have to save the galaxy or whatever while trying to get back in their own bodies and not get caught.
Oh my.
I honestly don't know if there's even any footage, never mind like a full on pilot, but this is what she created for the program.
Fascinating.
Okay.
Okay, so if you have any questions for Travis, throw them in.
Let's see. So you said this was like 2006, 2007. Was that when they were doing it, or when it was slated to air? When Project Something Something was slated to air?
That was the year. They didn't even air that season. Like, they were on hiatus or whatever, and they were just trying to reboot it. It's like 2007, 2008.
Okay. And then, did she have to write all of it, or just enough to get somebody to say this, you move on to the next round or whatever?
She had written at least a full episode. I don't know if she wrote like all 6 episodes.
Okay. And where is it now?
Oh, dead.
itself. Like, is it like this file on a hard drive somewhere that she like trots out for lols at, you know, parties or something? Like,
oh no, this was. She had her big break, and her big break turned out into this, and now she's back, still being a downtown New York playwright, as opposed to you know, having her own HBO miniseries.
Okay.
So, yes, lulls at parties.
Okay. And what was her name one more time?
Lindsay Joy.
Joy. Okay.
Okay. That sounds... I mean, I would watch that, but I watch bad movies on a regular basis.
You don't have a super high bar, David.
She should call Netflix right now, and it'll be a show.
I would actually... Yeah. I would absolutely sign up for at least 1 hour of watching Patrick Wilson play a version of Rachel McAdams.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm
absolutely in for at least an episode of that shenanigan myself.
All right. So an Outer Space Freaky Friday Project Greenlight project. That's interesting. Okay. Why don't we go on to Monty, who is also very new at this. No, really.
All right. I'm super excited about this topic because this is a show I tell people about all the time. Now.
Except us.
Well. Till
people,
now.
People.
Sorry.
All right. So it's January 26, 1991. I did look up the date.
That's it.
So it's a Saturday night. This is the era of like 3.5 channels. But it's deep winter. Yeah. It's all been reruns of like Golden Girls and the Finelli Boys.
Wow.
But now it's 10 p.m.
Oh,
and you have a choice.
Okay.
You can watch. You have your choice of three different things. One, a rerun of the rebooted Candid Camera. Two, a show called Carol and Company, which was a sketch show starring Carol Burnett, and it had Richard Kind and Jeremy Piven on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or three, the thing that I actually watched.
Oh,
something
no.
Claiming to be a TV movie, but was really a pilot that they were burning off in the middle of the night, called Tag Team. Tag Team starred Jesse the Body Ventura and Rowdy Roddy Piper as ex-wrestlers who were now cops.
Of course.
Now, at this time, they'd both been in movies. Piper had starred in They Live and Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Because he did, yeah.
And Jesse
lives here, so I know his stuff well.
And he still acts. And Jesse had already been in Predator and The Running Man. So the logic, I guess, was let's take these wrestlers who could sort of act and give them a show. So the way the pilot episode played out was, at the beginning, they're wrestlers. And the evil owners of the Federation want them to throw a fight. Because this is a world where wrestling is real. Because it's still 1991. So they refuse to throw the fight. They fight back valiantly and win using wrestling moves that are shot very particularly. And at the end, one of them tags the other in a big close-up. Because the show is going to be called Tag Team. Then they get fired because they were supposed to throw the fight. And then they took a bunch of other dumb jobs, like garbage disposal or something, until through a wacky coincidence, they ended up as cops. And now they're cops, but they use wrestling moves to take down the bad guys. And at the end of the episode, they fight these guys using exactly the same moves they did in the original fight. And there's even a tag, which I never understood because you don't tag in and out in a street fight, but it's there. And also, they had a dog named Body Slam. And I've always felt honored that I got to see this in its one actual airing.
Oh, I do miss the days when they would burn off pilots. Oh, my God. I saw so many good, terrible shows.
There's the Amazon technique where they just show all their pilots and dare you to pick between them.
Enjoy pilot season.
Of Heat Vision and Jack, which I have, in fact, seen.
Uh-huh.
What's his face? The guy who
Jack Black.
Saw him.
Oh, Dan Harmon.
Oh, Dan Harmon. He showed, I forget if part of it or all of it at an event. So it was great.
Wow.
Like to know the character names?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Rowdy Roddy Piper played Rick McDonald. And Jesse the Body Ventura played Bobby Youngblood.
So happy.
Oh, my God. Okay. Wow. I'm not even sure where to go with that. Hush it, Body Slam.
He's excited too.
Okay, so Do you know the outcome of this? Like, why it didn't work? Was it because there was a They Live sequel, or Jesse decided to go be governor, or what?
As far as I could tell, it was just bad, and they didn't want to make a series out of it.
Okay.
Don't mince words, Bones. What do you really think?
I mean, what happened, all I knew at the time was, here's this TV movie that's 1 hour long.
Right.
But at that time, I was already on what passed for the internet back then, posting on, like, Rec Arts TV. And there was some discussion of it back then. People just said, oh, that's just a pilot that didn't make it.
Oh, man.
I remember I used to, like, pour through TV guides all through the late 70s and through the 80s. And what they would do is they would actually just put pilot, and then it would list what it was.
Yeah.
And I would search those out in the summer and the dead of winter. Oh, my God. So many bad shows.
They were fun. Body slam. Okay. Did they allow Rowdy Roddy Piper to wear a kilt?
I think he may have worn one in the wrestling scene. Because, you know, McDonald, that
makes
is a
sense.
Scottish name. But he didn't in his police uniform because he's a cop.
Okay.
Is that not part of the uniform?
So it wasn't set here, is what you're saying.
Right.
Portland, Oregon was not the setting for this fine piece of cinema.
I feel like they probably would have gone undercover a lot, Charlie's Angels style, if it had been a series. But that's just me guessing.
True. Okay.
I mean, I'm suddenly getting an idea for something called Scotch Cops, but
Scotch Cops, what you gonna do? Oh, sorry.
They're the professional they're the civilian version of the Scotch Guard, which valiantly defends our couches.
Scotch Guard, I've seen him in a film. Isn't he in a new movie? Sorry.
So if that's all you
with
got.
With Patrick Wilson, yeah. No.
Yeah. Put man, I'd watch that in a heartbeat.
It's too bad it never went anywhere. Who was the bad guy in the pilot?
I do not remember. I think it was generic drug dealer.
Oh, okay. Your thug number two sort of situation.
I've seen him in a few things. Okay. He's good.
Okay. Okay. There it is.
All right. So wrestlers turned cops who can sort of act and tag one another at odd moments. Sure. Okay. Let's go on to Glenn. Who I think has a very Glenn kind of story, if I'm not mistaken.
It's true. Well, you know, all my stories are Glenn kind of stories.
Them on his album, Feeling Kind of Glenn.
Feeling Glenny. I'm sure none of you realize that I was on the Jeopardy game show in 1-2 episodes. I never talked about it. And there's no...
What? Get out.
And that's maybe, you know, so I kind of know some Jeopardy facts, not facts I could use on Jeopardy, but about Jeopardy. And I thought this was a perfect one for David's topic, which was, so you may know, I'm sure Monty knows, I know David knows, Travis may know, Kelly, I don't know if you care about this, but Jeopardy isn't just a modern show, and it didn't just have one predecessor. It was on three different formats from the 60s to 70s, and then it came back in 1984. Now it's been running for 33 years. But in 1982, there was, like Star Trek, in those, you know, that interregnum, there was no Jeopardy on the air. It had been off the air for a few years. Merv Griffin had a lot of stuff in the air. You know, he's got a big production company, was behind a lot of stuff. And he was anxious to get back into action because he felt strongly about the show. And it had run for, I think, like 15 years across, you know, the different versions of it. And, but the show had faded in popularity. It needed to be kind of refreshed. And, so he's thinking about what he might be able to do. And he thinks, you know, sci-fi, everybody's into sci-fi. It's 1982. It's all the rage. So here's the concept. Jeopardy 3000. The show's writers would consult with futurists and science fiction fantasy authors and create clues and corresponding questions that tested players' ability to not exactly predict the future, but predict the possible answers that people might think were coming. So, for instance, there are some sample clues out there you can find. One of them was, citizens of this nation make up most of the Mars colony in 2050. And the question, of course, would be, what is China? Right? So you could kind of guess that sort of thing. And, So some of the categories were really straightforward, like asking plot points about well-known sci-fi novels by Asimov and Heinlein, you know, other people who were sort of in the common whatever. And others were sort of science-related and how it might be applied. So, for instance, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and this smelly element make up most of Earth's biological molecules. And the answer, of course, or the question would be, what is sulfur? So, as I describe this concept, you can probably see the problem because nerds like us would like it a lot. TV executives in 1982 took a look at several test episodes that Merv had gotten written and put together and said something to the equivalent of goddamn eggheads. So Merv took it in stride. You know, he made a lot of money back then. He made a lot more money before he passed away. He revamped the original show, went back on the air, and like I say, 33 years later, that kind of slight revamp of the original is still going strong. But Jeopardy! 3000 never came to air.
I've seen clips of game show pilots online. Like there's a whole pilot that David Letterman shot as a host, which is awful, and you can tell that he hates it.
Oh my god.
You have to find that. He just loathes every second that he's doing it. But
can feel it. I've seen that. It was
uncomfortable.
Well, and my friend Art Chung, who developed the game show Ask Me Another. I couldn't remember.
I'm going to have to take away points for this name dropping. You got the details. So
Art Chung, was a writer on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and he then spent years trying to develop pilot game show ideas, and eventually Ask Me Another wound up catching fire. But anyway, he had one show with the guy from what was the MTV show with Colin?
Remote Control.
Quinn.
Yeah,
Remote Control.
Crowd.
Who was the host of that?
Ken Ober.
He had gotten Ken Ober in for audition for some new show. But none of this take. You know, it's hard to get game shows off the air.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say
off the ground.
I've never seen footage of Jeopardy.
It's also hard to get them off the air once
they stick. Clearly, I look at Jeopardy like it ain't leaving.
Yeah.
I've never seen
Wheel of Fortune took a recess and now it just won't go.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say I've never seen footage of Jeopardy 3000, but I've seen still photos and the set looks kind of cool. It looks like that, you know, late 70s. That Star Trek Phase 2 set. And the robot sidekick was pretty cool, but I have seen shots from where the robot sidekick started to attack Art Fleming, and so I understand. I understand they might not have gone with it.
This is how reality converges. The current Jeopardy set is pretty close to what it was going to be for Jeopardy 3000.
That's right, because they were predicting the future.
Exactly. The future is what things look like now.
Yeah.
Questions.
Oh my gosh.
I like to picture an art designer who comes into the office and like, what am I going to do for the new set? And he sees a faded drawer next to him. Oh my god. I'm done, guys.
Yep, now, I should say for Glenn's story, can you frame all of your questions in the form of an answer?
What is a negative response, David?
No, I can't. I'm trying and I can't get there. How within the universe of the show, how did they choose contestants?
Well, this was the tricky part, right? Because they needed to get people. This is, you know, so the way Jeopardy is cast normally is they're trying to find people who are not like super perfect because that's annoying to the audience. Like someone who can answer everything is terrible, but they want to get people who are slightly better than the general audience watching.
Right.
And otherwise the show would fall apart. Right. So for Jeopardy 3000, you know, they already had the formula down from 13 years of the previous runs. They looked for like the kind of person who would know this stuff. So they're going to college campuses, which they do for regular Jeopardy now, of course, but they go there, they go to math departments and computer science departments. They put ads in the back of Asimov's, what's it called? Not monthly, but his, Fantastic Stories. What's Asimov's? I can't remember anything tonight, obviously.
Wow.
So Asimov's science fiction magazine.
No, just Isaac Asimov's science fiction magazine.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And, that's why I couldn't
remember.
Serious. Oh, my God. Uh-huh. You know, and popular science and things like that. They put ads in the back.
Wait, now I have to guess the title of this, too?
What's that? No, it's right. It's correct. It's Isaac Asimov's. But they would
for,
you know, they
for
would go
bonus
to places.
Points, Kelly. We're going to need the name of Isaac Asimov's magazine.
So it's called Tag Team.
Isaac Asimov and Frederick Pohl are cops. It's going to be great.
That's right. Oh, my God. That'd be great. And they solve all the crimes. It's CSI 30 years before CSI. They use science fiction ideas.
It's C-Space-I.
Spacebar? So, yeah, so they would advertise. I mean, popular science. I don't know if you were alive in 1982, Callie, but if you were, I don't know how old you are.
Wow.
I was. And the back of a lot of, you know, geeky publications and like, popular science and crud like that. They always had these, like, classifieds in the back. So they'd say, send a postcard to, and you might be picked for a new game show. And they got people together, and they, mostly from the L.A. area, because people don't want to drive very far. And they, you know, shot some sample shows, and which I don't believe have ever been seen by human beings. We only know a little bit from the archives of Merv Griffin.
Okay.
That's all I got.
I don't even know where...
Stunned silence.
What else I need to know about that? Yeah. Well, because, like, I'm thinking of it in a modern context of, like, nerds and like nerds against nerds, like that almost would be a fun show to watch if it weren't for the fact that you'd only really get to ask one question, because then one of the contestants would just start like deep diving on everything that was wrong with the answer, and then
Inception
win.
The show could be called Who Wants to Interrupt, and it would be a test of being able to stop somebody else from talking continuously, which is often me in this show.
That's just
wait, are you certain that's not just Well Actually?
Oh,
you're right.
There was a show called Beat the Geeks, which I only remember because I once filled out a television guide style What to Watch Tonight thing, and I got to use the line, tonight on Beat the Geeks, geeks get beaten.
I watched that show actually a reasonable amount. It was okay.
I
it was no Jeopardy.
Once every 20 years.
It was no Jeopardy 3000, Monty.
Yeah.
They can launch a Jeopardy 3030 now, though. The time is right.
I don't even think it was remote control, I mean, to be honest. But yeah, that's a story for another day, right?
Culture.
All right.
That's a different episode.
I don't think a Jeopardy 3030 is a good idea, because the audience that watches Jeopardy and the audience that buys shotguns are completely separate.
Oh.
It's bad branding.
I thought you were going to say the average Jeopardy watcher is, you know, 77, and they're not going to understand anything that's for people below 30 anyway.
That could be true. I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, so David, do you have one too?
I do have one too.
Oh, Lord, here we go. All right.
Okay. All right.
This is going to be great.
Strap in.
I'm buckled up.
Okay. Sherwood Schwartz is a legend, right? I mean, he's a real person, but he created some of the most famous, most enduring shows in TV history. I mean, who doesn't know Sit
and
Right
he dug
Back?
The Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Who doesn't know Sit Right Back and You'll Hear a Tale, or Here's the Story of a Lovely Lady and all that. Ooh, excuse me. I'll fix that in post. His most successful shows have lived on in syndication for decades, and he wrung every last drop out of them. I mean, he brought Gilligan back as a pilot for like an Aaron Spelling vacation show. He brought back the Bradys as the Brady Brides and basically ripped off the Odd Couple. Then he brought them back again and basically ripped off 30-something. He called it the Bradys, but we all called it Brady-something. He even ripped himself off.
30-something?
36. I see. See? That would be popular today.
Sorry.
It would.
But, he even ripped himself off, creating a show called Dusty's Trail, about a covered wagon lost in the Old West that had a millionaire, his wife, a couple of showgirls. It had Forrest Tucker as Alan Hale and Bob Denver as Bob Denver.
What?
So, seriously. And, what was...
Not as the Skipper and Gilligan?
Well,
that would be even better.
Essentially.
I would just love that. Why do you keep calling
him
Skipper?
I would love that.
Dammit, I don't know why we call him Skipper. It's just what he has to
I'm the wagon master. Come on.
With zero explanation. Like, he just stands there and throws flat rocks across the water, so we call him the Skipper, and, like, that's it.
Very nice.
See,
very
that's, nice. Like, and clever compared to Sherwood Schwartz. Anyway, and, of course, Gilligan's Island itself was just a ripoff of No Exit. There are only 7 plots, after all. But those are only the most famous ones of his shows. One of the last projects he developed was a reboot of one of his 60s sitcoms that didn't take. The theme song is pretty well known. It's about time. It's about space. It's about people in a strange, strange place. He loved songs that told you the premise right up front. It's About Time was about two astronauts flung backwards into caveman times. And it premiered pretty well, but the ratings started to dip pretty quickly. So he flipped it and brought the astronauts back to the present, along with the cave people they'd befriended. Oh. Either way, it was a fish out of time idea. So near the end of his life, thinking about shows like Doctor Who, Voyagers, Sliders, The Time Tunnel, all these things, he proposed an hour-long lighthearted adventure. Maybe they could bring along a movie star or a professor or something. Maybe they couldn't find their way back home. It's a catchy idea, right? But the networks weren't as receptive this time. They said, so it's like Lost in space? The lengthy pause after that question is why the rebooted It's About Time never made it out of the pitching stage.
Oh my God. Okay. Did this show feature Cousin Oliver in any way, shape, or form?
You almost feel like it had to, because it just crashed and burned like that.
I feel like there was a caveman, and that caveman had a Cousin Oliver. That's what I feel like, listening to your description.
You're so brilliant.
That works for me.
And when was this? Like, what? Was it the era of Lost, like years that start with two, or are we just talking about Lost in Space?
Oh, yeah, no, this was right before he passed away just a few years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, by the way, okay. Robbie Rist, who played Cousin Oliver, also played the genius Dr. Z on Galactica 1980, which died in 9 episodes. Jinx!
Oh, I remember that.
I know a little bit too much about failed TV.
It's really, honestly, David, it's terrifying.
David has lived many lives.
You know about Cousin Oliver's second career in the medical field.
I prefer the modern, gritty reboot of Galactica 1980.
David has lived many lives, all of
which
them
was
watching
what?
Television.
That was Caprica.
CSI Miami? Oh,
yep.
Okay.
So CSI Miami. Not a lot of people pick up on that.
Deal with it.
Horatio Caine was originally a Daggett.
Yeah. That explains so much. Oh my God, mind blended. All right. And so did this go to pilot, or did he just go in and go, guys, I've got an idea, and they went
it didn't even get out of the office. It was that short.
Okay, like, so how was this discovered?
It was in his autobiography.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the man's a legend. He had an autobiography.
Oh, yeah. Lost, .. in space. Okay. So now I have to find the real one
These are all ridiculous, but one of them is a true story. And they are all disturbingly plausible. I can run through them one more time if you want.
Yes, please.
A quick rundown. Okay, we have Travis's story of Patrick Wilson and Rachel McAdams switching bodies on a space station for HBO.
Yes.
We have Monty's story of Jesse Ventura and Rowdy Roddy Piper as wrestlers turned cops. We have Glenn's futurist-advised remake of Jeopardy 3000, and Sherwood Schwartz's last hurrah, Lost in Space.
When punctuation is the star.
I feel so Peter Sagal-y right now.
Like that semicolon in Wit.
And you know, the semicolon steals the show half the time.
Oh, can't take your eyes off it.
Yeah.
That's not a full colon. It exists in two worlds, so there's a lot of ambiguity.
I mean,
it's in the process of becoming.
This is the horrible wit joke I made the first time I saw it. I went, it's a shame it's not about semicolon cancer.
Oh,
yeah?
David, no. Oh,
no, it's
no,
terrible.
No, I'll allow it. No. It's so bad it comes all the way around. I'll allow it. That's a good one. Okay.
Kelly's soft on joke crime.
Travis has such a good story in his story. That seems really legit. Glenn's story, and I know how this sounds, but I mean it in the nicest way. This sounds like every Glenn story I've ever heard Glenn tell me.
Uh-huh.
That's and like all of so them, good. They're all lies.
They're
and
all Glenny.
He knows, like, this is, he knows my, the guy who built the robot sidekick.
Did you know my niece is the art director on the Today Show? It's true.
I did know that.
I just said this is Slack today. It's why.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was going to say he knew the guy, like, his second cousin knows the guy that ran Craft Services when they shot the pilot or something.
Sure.
So.
I actually went to school with the art director for Late Night with Seth Meyers.
Oh, that's cool.
Really?
Really?
That means we're related now.
A city backdrop and a desk, huh?
Yeah.
Worth a try, I guess.
It's crazy.
It is a very nice looking show. I've actually noticed that, which is one of the reasons I was sort of like pleased to hear that, because I really enjoy how it looks. I have not enjoyed the others. So
I remember
that one stands out to me as a nice looking, like classy looking set for a late night talk show.
I actually
you're avoiding
remember
the question.
I just am very easily derailed, is what's happening.
I actually remember painting theater backdrops with her in school.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got Travis's HBO story. I'm trying to get back on track. Glenn's excruciatingly Glenn story.
Yes. Gladiest
there's
of all
the
Glenn
title.
Stories.
Excruciatingly Glenn.
Concentrated Glenn. Monty's ridiculous tag team wrestlers / cop show. And David's lost in space, courtesy of Sherwood Schwartz.
A legend.
See, Monty sounds legit because that sounds like something somebody would think was a good idea at that moment. Like, it really does. Like, we've seen them act, and the film to which that performance was committed did not spontaneously combust. We should put them on TV. That was the thing that happened because all of a sudden people realized you could get cable and everyone needed new programming. So that totally sounds legit. But so does the Sherwood Schwartz one, except that Sherwood Schwartz one sounds a little more ridiculous than even Sherwood Schwartz would normally be. And yeah, was a guy to really, you know, mine the files for new material.
I just have six words for you.
Oh no.
The Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island.
Oh, that was great. I remember watching that.
Yeah. Martin Landau and Barbara Bain.
Episode. What are you doing? Don't you slander high-quality pop culture.
I saw that when it aired. I raced home to see it when it aired.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh.
I preferred their work with Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, well, me too, yes.
Clip watch.
Yeah. Okay. That's... the Free World showed up on Gilligan's Island, and they couldn't leave. I never understood that. Okay. Okay,
well,
back on
track. By that point, they had turned it into a hotel, so...
Yeah, I feel it. Yeah.
And then Malcolm McDowell was hosting it. Nobody really liked that.
I would totally watch that. Are you kidding me?
That's a joke about the Fantasy Island reboot. That
seriously, why haven't
Ricardo
we...
Montalban.
That was such a weird show, too.
Yeah.
It was dark. Like, mm-hmm. I never
the reboot or the original?
Well, the
reboot was more
dark
explicitly
too.
Dark.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like the older one was dark by 70s standards, which is not the same thing at all as dark by 90s standards. So it was like, you know.
Well, it's like you had Mr. Rourke being kind of sinister a little bit, but just sort of like, you know, yes, you're going to get your just desserts. But it did have Roddy McDowall as the devil.
It's true.
He was a recurring thing. But in this, Malcolm McDowell was kind of the devil, too.
Did you see the pilot for Fantasy Island, though?
Yes.
That was very dark. That
yes.
was, you know, hunting the ultimate game, man, was in that.
Smiles, everyone.
You know, just getting
the most dangerous game.
I want to know why we don't have, like, Fantasy Airbnb now or something. Like, why isn't somebody recasting this as a thing that we could all be watching instead?
We may have just triggered
all the
that.
Time. Yeah, they rich people are doing this all the time. They call it America.
They have to solve mysteries every week, like how Lucifer takes the devil on the earth and turns it into just a murder of the week show.
I feel like I want to do a draft show now of just recasting the Love Boat, because I really want that to happen. Anyway,
Did you know about the Love Boat, the next wave?
Okay, no! Oh, don't.
I
mean, that
I just
was
watched Battle of the Network Stars this summer, so anything can happen.
That's
Wait,
right.
What?
Okay. They did a new battle? Oh, yeah. Anyway. Yes.
Okay, so
Focus.
I'm trying to figure out...
Down in front. Focus.
I can't believe David isn't the derailer here.
Right? That takes a strong position against people telling off-topic stories.
Oh, I will bury you in rabbit holes.
I don't think you can bury someone in holes.
Focus.
Can you?
Watch this. Focus.
Sorry, Glenn's kids.
Okay. I have to pick... Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island is a strong, strong argument, but I feel like the internet would have made more hay of this and I would have heard about it before now, so I'm going to cross that one off. Glenn's is still the chaotic neutral in all of this because it really could go either way, so I'm going to eliminate it for now, and so I'm down to Monty's Cop Show starring Rowdy Roddy Piper and Travis's Freaky Friday but in space show for HBO.
And somewhere overseas, Liz Miles just sat up with the right answer and has no idea
exactly.
Why.
I'm going Monty in the Cop Show because Rowdy Roddy Piper lived here, and I really don't have any stronger logic than that, except that he's pretty great. So I'm going to pick Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Well, I got to say, there are weirder reasons to pick something, but you are correct. Tag team is an actual thing. Instinctively, I want it to be a Stephen Cannell thing.
Oh, I don't think
it was, but it was someone who clearly learned at his feet.
Yes. You can watch much of it, if not all of it, on YouTube.
So did
if
it,
you
was
think
it,
I'm not going to immediately
I feel like I should.
Was it a prequel to Cop Rock? That's my question.
Oh, I do not believe it was Cop a musical. Rock.
Oh. Could have only been better. That
wasn't
way.
The question. Yeah.
Also I think it came after Cop Rock.
I think that's true, actually. Because Cop Rock was 1990, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah, I think so.
Good gravy. It's that long ago. I still have the terrible ads in my head. They ran them so often.
Oh, God, yes.
They did. Yes. All it was impossible right. to miss the advertisements. It was really easy to miss the show.
Well, now that we have navigated the focus there, we should go on to the lightning round, which takes up the second 35 minutes of the show.
Okay.
That's when we get struck with lightning.
So this lightning round,
no.
This is where all of you get to play and all of you get to argue. And... perhaps not surprising, this week's lightning round is called Pilot or Not. We actually have three choices. Was it a pilot? Was it a short-lived series? Or is something made up out of whole cloth?
I've trained my whole life for this category.
Right. As I was making it, I'm thinking, Monty's going to get them all right. So, all right. First question. For her first attempt at a TV series, in a potentially troubling bit of casting, Bette Davis was Madam Sin, a supervillain bent on world domination, of course, who ran a thought factory in the Scottish Highlands. True or false? Not true or false. Pilot, series, or made up?
Why?
Do we have a year?
1972.
No, you have 1 minute to answer.
Well, that seems more reasonable. Fair enough. Thought I'd ask, though.
I'm sorry. What year? 1972?
1972.
My brain is either inventing this, but I feel like I have a vague recollection of that existing as a series, but I would have thought I would have heard of it since. It sounds right.
It sounds right.
That means David probably invented it.
I feel like I looked up Crawford and Davis's IMDb's a lot while Feud Betty and Joan was airing.
Oh.
So I could almost list the final roles of Joan Crawford. It went a couple past It went a couple past Trog.
Oh my God.
And I don't remember seeing Madam Sin on Betty Davis's list. And I remember talking a lot about how Barbara Stanwyck was the smart one from that era because she just glommed onto Big Valley and said, oh, now I got a gig, suckers.
Yeah,
I live here now. Yeah. I say made up.
I think it's too perfect, made up.
And somewhere Liz Miles sat up and said, pilot. It was actually a pilot for ABC.
All right.
They aired it like once or twice and released it as a film overseas. She actually kidnaps Robert Wagner as a CIA agent to force his help in stealing a nuclear sub.
That's amazing.
That yeah.
I almost said pilot, and I'm like, no, it's just too good.
Yep.
In my defense, I never gave a final answer.
True. So
I say pilot.
Correct.
Rats.
So Travis has 1 point. Okay, number two. Early on in his career, Michael Keaton was cast in a sitcom pilot at CBS as a toll booth operator by day and a writer by night. He would reminisce about his day directly to the camera while he manned his booth at the entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel in Toll Man. It would have gone to series if they'd been able to get the rights to the song Soul Man, but without that, there was no show because that was the joke.
I don't think so.
Thumbs down.
Goodness.
I'm locking in fake right now.
That is correct. It is false. Although it's an idea fake that I've thought about more than once. Number three. Before hitting the beat as Detective Rick Hunter, Fred Dreyer was the star of a backdoor pilot episode of Chips as Lieutenant John Lagar, the leader of Force 7. A team of martial arts experts who, in their one adventure, breaks up a smuggling operation.
So you're already pilot. Telling us that it's not a whole show.
That's, I say pilot.
That's true.
No. Take the hints where you can get them.
But is it real?
Yes.
Real.
It is real. Yeah. But it was only that episode, and Fred got to wear an eye patch. So. and it's a very weird episode of Cheers.
Chips.
Chips.
Yeah, an even weirder
Chips.
Episode of Cheers.
That's right. But he was on Cheers.
This prank war has gotten out of hand.
He should have worn an eye patch.
You thought it was a weird episode
Cheers.
Of Cheers, yeah.
Okay, number four. In the run-up to the Moscow Olympics of 1980, CBS greenlit a show called Phil and Mickey about two athletes, Phyllis and Mikhail, who fell in love at, yes, the Olympics, and moved in together with Phil's father. Cultures clashed as they do, and there was even a wacky Soviet agent tailing Mickey to convince him to go back to the USSR.
This sounds too ridiculous to be fake. I say show.
Show.
I'm going to say pilot, but I'm going to double down on the wacky Russian agent being played by Yakov Smirnov.
This was before
no
Yakov.
Opinion.
But it is true, it ran for six episodes and vanished because, of course, we didn't go to the Moscow Olympics. It was
what
like,
was it called?
They thought, yeah, we're going to plan ahead. We're going to have this show, and it'll be right there in the zeitgeist in the... Oh. Oops.
Well, there was that Baryshnikov movie.
Oh, yeah, the dancing...
White Nights.
White Nights, yeah.
Yeah, White Nights.
That's a weird film.
We're kind of trying to... Follow that thing's jet stream all the way to the top.
All he had to do was stay buckled in, you know? And the whole film would have been different.
All right, five. Before Married with Children or Modern Family, Ed O'Neill took to the streets of New York City as Popeye Doyle, based on Gene Hackman's character from The French Connection, knocking heads and racing under elevated subways on a TV budget. Even his pork pie hat looked wrong.
I think no. It's a great idea, though. I'm surprised it didn't happen, but I'm saying no show.
I say pilot.
Pilot.
I'm going to say pilot and also put in a plug for Ed O'Neill's successful earlier show, It's Your Move, with a young Jason Bateman.
I remember that well. I liked that one.
Yeah, it's great.
Popeye Doyle was, in fact, a two-hour movie pilot on NBC.
What?
And it's really not good.
I've never met Ed O'Neill, but I did sit behind Katie's Seagal. Like Steven Seagal, at a table reading. So there you go.
I sat 4 feet away from her sisters, facing me.
Did you know that her sisters are those twins in Grease 2?
No.
And in the sitcom Double Trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait,
also some Doublemint ads, I think.
Yep.
Did you meet her, is what you're saying?
Oh, like that's the interesting thing people are talking about.
Did Glenn just get out Glenn right there?
I know, I'm just asking, David.
Yeah, it was the Austin TV Festival.
Oh.
Ah.
Cool.
You could up your Glennon quotient if you go next year.
Interesting.
Also, way to go to Austin after I leave. That's
Hey, it was clear then. Number six. A court orders a monkey to become a man's butler. Sounds crazy or crazy enough to work? That was the premise of Monkey Shines.
Sure. Show.
Fake.
Show. I almost think I've seen that.
I'm just stunned because it's plausible. And it really frustrates me that it's plausible.
It kind of makes you think of Mr. Smith, right? Do you remember Mr. Smith?
Yeah.
The talking orangutan who's a presidential advisor on NBC in 1982 or 1983.
Wait, what?
Seriously! Created by one of the creators of Taxi.
What?
I swear to God.
Yes! That I remember that. Yeah. I shouldn't, but I do.
This show is called...
Monkey Shines is fake. Let's, but also, the orangutan thing should also be fake, so...
I dismissed it as fake, but now I'm not sure.
This show is called Slowly Losing Our Sanity, Chloe. Slowly Losing Our Grip on Reality. Wait, there's a show like that? That means there could be an endless number of monkey shows.
That's it.
Okay.
Of course, Ted Bessel in Me and the Chimp in 1972 on CBS.
Oh, God almighty.
But that chimp didn't talk.
That chimp.
This is Lentil a talking
Link.
Chimp.
There's a chimp who knows how to talk.
That's right.
I'm still going with show. I like the idea it's a show.
Man.
I'm going with pilot because this is why we can't have nice things.
Is that nice or not nice, though? I'm still confused.
Well, Monkey Shines was actually a fake show for a music video from a song by Jonathan Colton, which is done as the opening credits to this sitcom. Featuring their co-stars Paul and Storm, and a little-known guy as Neil Gaiman as the wacky neighbor.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Life is too weird.
And I will warn you, it is an earworm. It is amazing.
You're throwing away $1 million idea, Colton.
Right? Okay, number seven. Get this. A script by Levinson and Link, the creators of Columbo, starring Martin Landau and Barbara Bain after leaving Mission Impossible, and the director... Some kid making his final TV film, name of Spielberg. Martin Landau starred as Savage, a reporter on the trail of compromising photos of a nominee to the Supreme Court.
Almost think I saw
I say fake because Supreme Court makes it not as interesting, so I'm going fake.
All right, I'm gonna get on the Kelly train, fake. Toot toot.
Yeah.
You go first, Kelly, Travis. Then I got something.
No, I'm gonna Kelly on this. Yeah, right. It's fake.
I'm gonna say it's fake, mostly because a couple days ago, David in the Slack, you said Spielberg's first thing was a Columbo. I think.
No, he directed the first actual episode of Columbo, but this.
Oh, okay.
This was the last thing he directed before going into movies.
Plausible David ability is what we call this.
Yes.
Everyone else said fake. I'm going pilot.
True. Pilot movie that is
fun.
Wow.
And it really was his last movie before the Sugarland Express.
Right on.
All right. Number eight.
Wow.
The dude.
I can't believe I got myself talked into that.
All right. Number eight. The dude abides, the cowboy narrates, but once upon a time, and well before he had that trademark mustache, Sam Elliott suited up as Evil Knievel in Evil Knievel in the pilot for an adventure comedy. In this episode, Evil competes against a female motorcycle daredevil.
Now, I'm sure I saw that. If it doesn't exist, I'm really pissed at my brain.
That sounds legit. A, there's your show title. B, that sounds legit. I say pilot.
Pilot.
I think pilot. I swear to God, I saw something that resembles that. Maybe
okay,
I'm thinking of Steve Austin.
Everyone else is going pilot? I'm going fink.
Oh. Glenn, I think you're thinking of Monkey Shines.
I sure am.
$6 million man. I'm not
Sam Elliott is a monkey.
I would watch that, too. This was actually a one-shot pilot.
Yes!
No word on how much of the episode he spent in a full-body cast.
What year?
1974. You know?
I think, well, I would have been six, but I have a good memory. I think I saw that.
Okay, number nine.
He met Sam Elliott's body cast once at a convention.
he was kind of stiff, but you know.
Yeah, but you know, he was doing it. Yeah, but wait, he was doing a signing, right?
Oh, except you had to sign
him. Sign his thing. That's I like it.
Yeah, you sign his cast, yeah.
But you still had to pay him the 20 bucks.
The entire cast was there, and it was a signing.
Ah. Oh! Ow! Ow!
I hurt myself for that one.
No, Kelly, it comes all the way around.
not this one. It gets stuck.
My eyes, yes, they rolled all the way around for that one.
That is the full Glenn experience.
Full cast signing, exactly.
So, okay, number nine. By the hoary hosts of Hogoth, there's even been an attempt to turn Doctor Strange into a series well before Cumberbatch. But there's also a script that started out as a dark, dark Batman origin that became a Doctor Strange pilot, but when they couldn't get the rights to Doctor Strange, became the adventures of Mr. Mystical, a mysterious man overseeing New York City from high atop the Chrysler Building, featuring Bronson Pinchot in his first post-Balky role.
Fake. I only say fake because there's too much Pinchot.
Right. Yes, it is fake. It is fake. There's too much detail.
You can't go all
there?
Pinchot. You need the like Lynn Baker though. To balance it.
Yeah.
You can never go full Pinchot.
You never go full Pinchot.
And finally.
I tried it in Beverly Hills Cop, almost ruined him.
Oh my God.
Finally, think of it. William Shatner, Adam West, togas. In 1963, Alexander the Great almost came to television with Shatner's Alexander conquering the world and West as his general, Cleander, in what West described as the wine, women, and song type. It could have been glorious, but I'm sure our listeners are glad it didn't happen.
What year was that?
1963.
All right.
I'm going to say fake, because I don't think Shatner was acting in America in 63 yet. I don't know if you'd fake us, but you might fake
I know enough about Alexander the Great to know that there's no way this was ever going to be on TV, so I say fake.
I'm going to say fake, but only because Alexander the Great.
Yeah, looking at where Shatner's career was for, like, the Twilight Zone. I don't see him being the lead in 63. I also am saying fake.
Believe it or not, the whole thing's on YouTube. It is one episode, and it is kind of amazing. I think it was, if I'm recalling, it was produced by the guy who did Ben Casey and The Defenders, so it was sort of prestige television. And, you know, let's do something classical. And
oh
then
goodness.
With Shatner and Adam
this
West.
Is, this is the only game show that comes with homework, because there's no way I'm not going to go see that.
I know.
And you need to find they did interviews talking about it, which is where I got the quote about the wine, women, and, you know.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing. So, so Travis won that round with 1 point.
Yes!
Because I only awarded 1 point. That pretty much is the show. So I'd like to thank all of you for showing up. Kelly and Travis and Monty and Glenn. Thank you.
No, thank you, David.
A pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, too. Again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are.
No, thank you.
Thank you. No, thank you.
No, thank you.
All right.
Thank Kelly.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And there we go. I didn't even mention the Evel
Knievel pilot, and I think I did. I'm scanning through it. I think I did see this when I was six.
I need information about every existing one of those. Because, yes, I have homework, but I wasn't writing it down.
It doesn't exist, David, go and shoot it and upload it to YouTube.
Well, honestly,
This is what children are for, David. I have to use
Mr. Mystical because I like the name. But just looking up some of the ones I didn't even use, there was a show called Sheriff Who from 1967 with John Astin as a comic sheriff.
David, I'm going to stop you there. I watched that yesterday.
Ha!
No!
Well,
how is that possible?
What? Because it was remixed into a movie called Evil Roy Slade. Tell me you wouldn't watch this DVD. It says Evil Roy Slade, John Astin looked like a badass bandit, and down at the bottom, each face in a little square like it's Murder on the Orient Express, you've got Mickey Rooney, Henry Gibson, Milton Berle. Dick Shawn plays a singing cowboy sheriff.
Oh my God.
Edie Adams is in it.
Yeah.
Find the movie Evil Roy Slade.
They remixed the film?
Yeah.
They had two pilots. One where he's in the Old West and his girlfriend is trying to reform him, and one where he goes to Boston.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And
it's all John Astin all the time. Wow. And incredibly dumb Mad Magazine style jokes all the way through it.
Oh dear.
Wow.
Roy Slade.
And this whole show
has just been a montage of my flabbergasted face.
I'm so mad that wasn't part of the official questions, though.
Pat Morita, Ed Begley Jr., Adam DeLuise.
What?
It's an amazing cast.
John Ritter is in one scene.
Oh, my God. Who was in this movie? Arthur Batanides, who is the brother of a woman my mother worked for when I was a child. I'm not lying.
Fantastic.
That is peak Glenn.
Excruciatingly Glenn.
Arthur Batanides was a B-list
Lock
actor.
The table.
Was in everything. He was the guy. Do you remember the Happy Days episode with the mafia guy with the claw or something?
Mm-hmm.
It was this bizarre episode of Happy Days. Look that.
No, I don't.
That was Arthur Batanides.
It's where the phrase "jumping the claw" comes from.
My mother used to demonstrate microwave ovens for a living in department stores. The woman who hired her and contracted her for this in stores, her brother was Arthur Batanides, and he was in Evil Roy Slade. This is amazing.
David, you're going to find a way to stick all this into the actual episode, right?
Sticking that in the episode. Are you kidding?
I watched Evil Roy Slade literally last night.
Wow. And see, they used to do that. They would release unsold pilots as films overseas. So they became, they earned back some of the money.
We need to bring this back.
Right?
Here we go. The Claw Meets the Fonz aired November 3rd, 1978.
Now, we were having an argument while watching Evil Roy Slade whether it was actually, literally, the pilots for Sheriff Who stuck together, or whether they had just taken the script and reshot it. And I think they actually reshot it to make it a movie.
Interesting.
But if you look up Evil Roy Slade and Sheriff Who, it's the exact same description everywhere.
Right. Did it look more cinematic than TV did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So,
look at the cast. Even the TV, it's got real heavy hitters in it.
Yeah. Well, some of the others that I did not use. Shotgun Love Dolls, which actually starred Rachel McAdams.
flabbergasted face.
Beth's ordinary teen life is turned upside down when she finds that her dream is now her reality, and she is living in an alternate universe where she is the newest member of an all-girl crime-fighting team.
No.
Wow.
But
this box art.
But that title.
Box art is amazing.
Henry
Gibson. Right, of course.
Yes.
And
Mickey Rooney plays the evil owner of Western Express who's out to get Evil Roy Slade because he keeps being robbed.
I saw Mickey Rooney in Funny Thing Happens the Way of the Forum when he's touring it this is 1980 something. And you have to stand and put your hand over your heart for the national anthem before every show he was in.
Ah, that's right. That's right. I've heard that from Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
Speaking of failed TV shows, do you remember a show called One of the Guys from 1981.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I do.
Nathan Lane and Dana Carvey as college roommates.
Yes.
And Mickey Rooney is like Dana Carvey's grandfather who moves in with them.
That's the one that gave Dana Carvey his Mickey Rooney impression that he did for the rest of his career.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Because Mickey Rooney would sit them all down and tell them how he was used to be the biggest star in the world. You hear me? The world.
I have a James Cagney story, but it doesn't work. It's a Glenning story. It doesn't fit. It's thinking of Mickey Rooney.
And then the other one, I vaguely remember when this aired, and I'm sorry I didn't see it. I kind of wanted to see it as a series now, called Higher Ground from 1988. A retired FBI agent, John Denver, becomes a bush pilot in Alaska, where he investigates his friend's murder and drug smuggling.
Oh, that's legit, God. Because he gets to spend a bunch of time flying planes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
That's
yeah.
real.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know what. Yeah. Guess why it didn't air.
And I will say, Lee Goldberg, who went on to like write for Diagnosis Murder and a whole bunch of other stuff, he has a wonderful set of books. There's like a short one called Unsold TV Pilots, where he just like culls the best of them. But he has two exhaustive volumes from, you know, covering from like 1950 to 2005 or something. It's crazy. And it is just a list of all of these terrible, terrible premises. And you look at them and go, how did they even get that far? That's just
there's
wrong.
A lot of money being thrown around at one point.
But when you walk in the room, why don't you look at your notes and say, nope, it's a cop show. And then you get, you know, they at least shoot the pilot.
Yeah.
All right, I got to go, but do you want to hear my James Cagney story?
Sure.
Sure. All right.
That's two different things.
Focus. Focus.
I used to be friends with this photographer, Greg Heisler, who shot a lot of Time Man of the Year covers. And he was telling us the story. He was off to shoot who told me the story? It was not Greg Heisler, was it?
Boo.
Ooh, maybe I'm telling the story.
No.
No.
The story. Well, no, was it Greg Heisler told me the story?
We broke Glenn.
Focus.
Shoot. Well, the story was, I thought it was him who told me this. Anyway, but I'm getting this wrong. So he's there to shoot John Travolta with a writer who's writing the story.
You should have shot him with a camera.
Exactly. This is a great mystery. Who shot the great John Travolta's of history? So Travolta is
that
telling,
went to oh, pilot. No, no, oh,
this was.
Pilot.
I'm sorry.
There was
this,
the John Travolta Heisler, of the 1950s. We saw him in Greece.
Because Heisler is not. No, this is Greg Heisler. Because Heisler is not doing the interview. Right, he's taking the photos, taking the photos of Travolta while this interviewer is talking to him, and they've arranged this shot, and they're talking, and they're having lunch with Travolta. He makes lunch for them, and he says, "You know, there's only." It's only two people really ever who are both great actors and great dancers. And they're like, well, no, what do you mean? My name is Pet Squin.
No one tell him.
Not Gene Roddenberry.
Gene Roddenberry.
Gene Rogers.
Gene Travis.
Good. Gene. Oh my God. Gene, my brain.
Ashley.
Gene Monty?
Gene Kelly. Okay, so Gene Kelly. And they start listing off people. What about so-and-so? What about
I'm
so-and-so?
Right here.
This Travolta, is the best Pictionary we've ever played.
And Travolta is saying, no, I said best, you know, best, a great actor is also a great dancer. There's me, and there's James Cagney. And they're kind of like, all right, we're not going to say anything. And then the best part is then James Cagney showed up. He was visiting, and that's the story.
He really was. He
and then they shot some pictures together. You can find the pictures of them together online.
Didn't you tell that story in the Incomparable episode about...
Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle Dandy,
that's
are you on that
correct.
One?
That's correct. That's right. I did. That's also probably where I talked about Christmas and commercialism.
all I tell want that is story what I have then. Coming to me. All I want is my fair share.
I'm going to stop recording because I need to put my kids to bed. Thank you.
Sorry, Glenn's kids.